We're talking about everything that mattered this NFL preseason. What injuries in Carolina are going to do to Cam Newton and that Panthers offense? Will the Patriots be able to protect Tom Brady's blind side? And why the Cowboys are in big trouble if Travis Frederick misses a lot of time? Plus, Adrian Peterson's impact on Washington's offense and what Seattle might have been doing chasing Jacoby Brissett. It's all on the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am Gary Gramling here, as always, with Andy Benoit. Andy, we're going to say we have wrapped up sort of the most impactful part of the preseason. We're through week three, and I think we're going to sort of look back and see what happened this summer and how it's going to impact the upcoming season.
We're in that in-between spot. Regular season, it feels like it's here, basically. I think in the minds of teams, it is. They don't give much regard, if any, to that fourth preseason game. And there's some preseason news that impacts what we're doing with the regular season. So it's a good time. It's a revving up time of year.
It is. And we are actually talking at the top of the show, offensive line injuries and how it's going to affect offenses of some of the what we think are Super Bowl contenders this year. And we're going to start in Carolina because this is the most interesting one to me. The Panthers have sort of been trying to, I think, recapture that identity from that 2015 season when obviously Cam was MVP and everything went right for them. Boy, they are in trouble up front. Darrell Williams is out. Matt Khalil is going to miss an undisclosed amount of time here. Amini Silatolu is going to miss some time. Even Jeremiah Searles, who was kind of a sixth lineman backing up a couple spots, he left the game the other day with a hamstring injury. I think back to Norv Turner's last year as an offense coordinator in Minnesota, and they were completely ravaged on the offensive line. And basically, he was kind of unable to adjust, and that's why they moved on from him in Minnesota. I'm afraid
we
are facing the same thing.
I hear you. I think it's a valid concern because Norv Turner, part of his reputation is his protection concepts are what they are, and he's willing to live with some of the deficiencies. What he found in Minnesota and why he stepped away is that they could not live with those deficiencies. The players were simply not good enough to block an offensive tackle, and we're talking 2 years ago now when he left midseason, and I'm sure my guess is they said to Turner, hey, you got to tweak your offense, and he's said, can't do that. Not in the middle of the season. That's not how the offense is set up. So they parted ways. So now here's Norv Turner again, and you just mentioned his offensive tackles, Matt Khalil on the left side, Darrell Williams on the right side. They're both out, and then there's questions at guards. Those guys you mentioned are probably backup level guards anyway, so there are already questions there to begin with. I think it's a big deal for Carolina. I do, because of how Turner uses his pass protections, and what we'll see, it becomes even more important than Gary for their running game to dominate and be more foundational. Last year, it had good numbers, but it did not dictate the flow of games. It had good numbers because Cam Newton inflates the numbers, but from a snap-to-snap basis, they were not a very good running team. Certainly not good enough for that to be who they're built around or what they're built around. They need to do that now. It's hard to do that without good offensive linemen, so you have to do it by design with them, and it becomes even more important that Cam Newton be a threat, at least in their running game, whether he's running the ball or not.
Yeah, I mean, two things I wanted to mention here. One of them, I mean, look, we don't have an answer for it yet. Norv Turner was obviously, he was out of football for a year and a half. A lot of guys, when they're out of football, and Norv did do this, they kind of travel around and see what's going on and see what other teams are doing and sort of pick up some concepts that way. So you kind of wonder, will he have, kind of a new approach to what he does? Not a completely revamped approach, but might he know how to weather this storm a little bit better after he had basically a year and a half to kind of think about what he's going to do going forward here? The other thing I want to bring up, and I've always wondered this about Cam Newton, we talk about it all the time. He hangs in the pocket. He runs on design runs. He is a guy who really hangs back in the pocket. When he started scrambling a little bit more last year, I think that added some more of a dimension to this offense when they really needed it in the passing game, where they were not good at receiver. They were not very good in protection. I just wonder, can they... can they basically not only risk him on design runs, but say, you got to scramble more too, and basically you have to, we're going to put you in harm's way a little bit, but this has got to be you carrying this offense.
That's a philosophical discussion there, because what we're wondering is, do coaches go to a quarterback like Newton and say, we need you to scramble, or is it just one of those things that you know is possible and can happen and he's got permission to, and you maybe encourage it but maybe don't? I don't know that answer. I don't know, with a running QB like that and a deep drop back passing game, that does present opportunities for scrambles, because those routes take longer and they mm-hmm. lift the defense, and that creates space on the field, and you're in a deeper drop back, so you've got more vision, a wider vision cone, which presents more scrambling opportunities. So I understand the question. I don't think if I'm coaching a QB, especially one like Newton, who is very tough in the pocket. And that's one thing I've always admired about him, is he does not rely on his mobility as a crutch as a passer. Now, he's got a lot of fundamental flaws as a passer, though, that tend to come and go. Mm-hmm. So if I've got a QB like that who's a little bit inconsistent in his mechanisms as a pocket passer, I don't know if I want to plant the scrambling seed in his head, because it feels like, and this is, I haven't taught quarterbacks, it feels like that could almost give tacit permission to be sloppy in other areas, though.
All right. No, that's fair enough. What would you do? I really liked, I thought he was very opportunistic with the scrambling last year. And you know, you go back even to the MVP season, leading up to that Super Bowl, I remember Jenny Vrentis had done a piece with Dan Quinn, and Dan Quinn just kind of said, we don't worry about him scrambling. He doesn't scramble. He hangs back there. We worry about him on the designed runs, but we don't worry about him breaking out of the pocket and running. I think back to when they beat the Patriots in Foxborough. He had two big scrambles in that game that it was kind of out of character for him over the last couple of years. And I think that kind of, I don't know if it was just a confidence issue at that point. Obviously, they were thinking about revamping with a little more quick strike stuff, and then they sort of got away from that a little bit. I just wonder if that's some way you can kind of, build the bridge to a serviceable offense if you just have an offensive line that's not going to be able to block in a deep drop back passing game.
Well, one thing you may want to consider, because I think their offensive line is in dire enough strait. I mean, remember, it's not a great line to begin with either. Yeah. Khalil and Darrell Williams are decent tackles. They're not cornerstone one-on-one pass protectors snap after snap either. So you already have an average O-line that's in dire straits now. One thing you may want to consider is telling Newton to scramble more, because if he does that, the defense believes he'll do that, then the defense is going to start spying him and playing more passive zone coverage. What Jenny talked about with Dan Quinn coming after him, and Wade Phillips after that Super Bowl where Denver beat Newton and the Panthers, he told me the exact same thing. He said, Newton really doesn't scramble. That's why we blitzed him a lot, because we're not worried about him beating the blitzers and running down the field. So when you blitz, you force the rest of the offensive line to pass protect one-on-one. If the Panthers aren't comfortable with their pass blockers, then you want to make the defense not blitz. And the way to make them not blitz would be to have Newton be a scrambler, an out-of-structure runner. That would scare some defenses.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens this year with this offense. They, it's just another year where it just feels like they're going to be searching for that identity again, kind of like they were early last year, and they sort of barely patch it together. Let's talk about the Patriots. Isaiah Wynn is going to be out for the year. We talked about the different options they were going to have on that offensive line, especially at left tackle coming into the year. One of them is obviously gone, and I think it's also the one that they probably wanted to be their left tackle option here. If you're New England, and I've said this about Gronkowski, I think if they're one Gronkowski injury away from being in pretty deep trouble, relative obviously, because you still have Tom Brady, and you're not gonna all of a sudden gonna be a 4-12 team. But I just kind of think back to when they lost all those receivers. I think it was the 2015 season, and then Philadelphia, Chip Kelly Eagles team went in there and really pounded them in Foxborough, and they couldn't get anything going. Are we sort of approaching that point with the Patriots where it might be too many men down to have next man up sort of work?
We ask that every year, don't we? I mean, every single year it feels like this is the year. And those Patriots you referenced that the Eagles beat, I mean, I was at that. That was the only regular season game I went to that season.
There. Yeah. Yep.
I mean, those Patriots still went to the AFC Championship and were 1 2-point conversion away from being in the Super Bowl, even with all those injuries over the course of that season. That's when they lost at Denver. I don't think this win injury, it's a big deal because he's a first-round rookie and he gave him some answers at left tackle or left guard, maybe, where Joe Tooney's been inconsistent. At best, he's been inconsistent in pass protection. They don't have those options now, but really, Gary, it's the same old line it was last year, only with Trent Brown in place of Nate Solder. And that might sound like a downgrade to people, but Nate Solder was not great. That's why he's not here anymore. They didn't re-sign him because he wasn't worth it. And the Giants desperately needed a tackle, so they became the highest paid guy in the league. Good for him, but he's an average left tackle most of the time. And I think Trent Brown can be that and serviceable in that capacity, and yeah. Brady gets the ball out quicker. And I think it's business as usual with the Patriots. We have this discussion every August and September with New England. New England will lose a game in September, and we say, is the dynasty over?
I still think they're in big trouble if Gronk is out. Gronk was healthy last year. The one game he missed was when they got trounced in Miami in that Monday night game. I don't know if they have enough weapons if Gronkowski is out. It would be interesting since they have they signed 5,000 running backs, but we'll see.
Well, but what they do so well is make weapons better versions of weapons. So, like, for example, Julian Edelman against a cornerback, Edelman's a solid to maybe above solid caliber wide receiver. But when you put Edelman on a linebacker, Edelman becomes Jerry Rice. And they do such a good job at getting those mismatches for guys that, yeah, they might have average personnel, but if they get them in favorable mismatches, those guys still have the same effect. I'm not saying they've got other Gronkowskis on the roster, but they still find a way to make it work because they can get in and out of everything with Tom Brady running the show at the line of scrimmage.
Well, let's go down to Dallas with Travis Frederick and sort of a bit of a mystery illness here. And this is actually this is kind of perfect timing because this is usually the part in the show where we disclose private medical information for loved ones. And my brother, my younger brother, Bus, actually had this syndrome. It's a Guillain-Barré syndrome about 2.5 years ago. It's an autoimmune disorder that affects the central nervous system, causes a lot of numbness. I did ask my brother for permission to disclose that, but he said it took about 5 weeks with some IVs and physical therapy for him to get back to feeling like his old self. Now, obviously, my brother at the time was a 30-something music teacher at a public school in Brooklyn, not a professional athlete, but at the same time, he wasn't asked to do a whole lot of reach blocking in his job. So Frederick is I think he's going to be Travis Frederick again at some point in 2018, but I think we could be looking at like a 4 to 6 week type of thing here. And boy, they do not have a whole lot of margin for error in Dallas, considering what the lack of receiving weapons and really a need for Dak to kind of stand on his head a little bit in the passing game. And then obviously they need a run game to carry them.
We talk all the time about injuries, and something we say is that there are only about 15 to 20 guys in the league, non-quarterbacks, who if you take them out of the lineup, it can drastically change the entire offense or their entire defense. Everyone else, to a certain degree, there's an element of next man up in that, it's a downgrade when the backup comes in, but we can still at least run our system and try to play the way we've been approaching things all offseason and all season so far. So, having said that, Travis Frederick's one of those 15 to 20 guys. Mm-hmm. I think if you take him out of Dallas's lineup, that does significantly impact their outside zone running game, which impacts their play action game, which impacts the rest of their passing game. He is a big time important cog for them. It's partly him and partly the position he plays. When you're an outside zone running team, you need a center that can, as you said, reach block, which your brother was never asked to do, but Frederick is asked to do all the time.
Not yet, yeah.
Yeah, and a reach block, just to kind of visualize it for someone, picture you're the center and think there's a defensive tackle kind of shaded over your right shoulder. You've got to snap the ball and get around that tackle. You got to move to your right and pin him back inside. So you got to cross over the defender's face. It takes a lot of quickness and refined technique, especially because you have to snap the ball first. So you're already starting out a half beat behind, because that's how it is for centers. Frederick's the best in the NFL at it. I think second best is Alex, probably Jason Kelsey, then Alex Mack. Pick your order there. But those three guys are big in their offenses, and Dallas is more of an outside zone running offense than those other two teams. So, yeah, I do think the other thing they did, Gary, was they pulled Frederick and Zach Martin a lot last year. It's called a G-sweep run, where the guard and the center just basically pull out wide and the running back goes behind them. That also probably goes away if Frederick's out of the lineup, and that's their biggest run in Dallas.
Yeah, and they, you know, Zach Martin, obviously we're still a couple weeks away from the opener here, but Zach Martin might be questionable for that one. And obviously you've had Tyron Smith battling some issues the last couple of years. So, you know, we've kind of talked about this offseason, how much longer can the Cowboys offensive line perform at this level? And, you know, I don't know, maybe this is a sign that it might not be too much longer.
Well, I mean, I hope not. These guys are all in their mid-20s. If this is a sign and they've already reached their apex, then there's going to be a 30-for-30 one day about what could have been with this Cowboys offensive line, because this line's as good as the one that won those Super Bowls for the Cowboys in the 90s.
All right, before we move on, Andy, you know, only with NFL Game Pass do you get every out-of-market preseason game live. Top rookies, comeback players, new players on new teams, it all happens in the preseason live with NFL Game Pass. Now, I'm not sure who's going to be protected and sort of held out in preseason week four, but, you know, I really hope we see Lamar Jackson again. I thought he made major strides down in Miami this past week, looked much more comfortable. I'd love to see him get a chance to kind of build on that. And you know what? I can watch Lamar Jackson live in the preseason, and if I miss his game, I can replay it after it's aired. Whoever you want to watch this preseason, you'll need NFL Game Pass to do so if you're out of market. And, you know, I think my favorite thing about preseason week four is it's kind of a chance to see some of these guys who will be Cinderella stories down the line. I remember when I was a younger man, guys like Willie Parker, Victor Cruz, Fred Jackson in Buffalo emerging during that final week of the preseason. So it's kind of a great opportunity to see who's next. Make sure to watch all the action this preseason with NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2018 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Sign up now at NFL.com/MMQB10things. That's NFL.com/MMQB10things. Game on. And as Andy and I always say, you really want to get NFL Game Pass if you like this show and you're into this sort of thing. So go get it. Get on it. Let's talk. This was a week one preseason interview here. Darius Geis down in Washington. A lot of people were excited about him. He's going to miss the year with the ACL. Kind of the interesting development here is Adrian Peterson. Adrian Peterson has joined Washington. 11 carries, 56 yards for them the other day. What is left with Adrian Peterson at this point, Andy?
I thought there were times last year where he looked similar to what we've seen over the years. Now, not Adrian Peterson circa 2012, but he was a shadow of himself, and I mean that in a good way, because that himself was one of the top 7 or 8 best pure runners to ever play the game. So yeah. I think in the right setup, you can. There were games in Arizona last year where you could see that. You could see the explosiveness, the short area, lateral explosiveness. He's a strong mover. He's not an expansive runner. He's not very good in your passing game. So that's the concern. And that's why he was in Arizona and not New Orleans, because New Orleans intertwined their passing game and their running game more than the Cardinals. And what they found, is when Peterson's on the field, we become very predictable because he's so limited in our passing game. So that does concern me about Washington here. They do such a great job of intertwining their running game and passing game, not to the degree the Saints do, but they're arguably the most prolific play action team in the NFL. Yes. The good news on play action is you can just fake the handoff to Peterson and still run the play, but we're talking conceptually, bigger picture. It helps to have a running back who you can trust as a blocker and a short area receiver if you're going to be any team that throws and runs and intertwines those concepts.
Yeah. No, that's what I was wondering about is what happens with him and the play action game in Washington. I do think he's better than Rob Kelly, better than Perine there. Chris Thompson is I love Chris Thompson. I know he's coming off a broken leg, but I wonder if this turns into 60% Chris Thompson and 40% some mix of the other three.
I could see that. Chris Thompson's their best. Yeah, you could argue Thompson next to a healthy Jordan Reed is their most important player offensively, other than the quarterback, of course. You could argue that. So I'm with you on that. I think Chris Thompson's really the key to that whole backfield, and then whoever they put around him. If you want a first or second down runner, Peterson can be – I think he can certainly be a quality asset in the right kind of rotation. And if there's a game that you need him to carry the ball 20 or 25 times, I think you can do that a few times a year with him.
Yeah, that's look, Alex Smith in there, you're – I'm open to the possibility that now that they're healthy, especially on the defensive side of the ball and on the offensive line, that Washington is sort of a 9-7 talent type of team, and then with Alex Smith, you don't get the ceiling that you might have with Kirk Cousins, but you have a guy who protects the ball. I think you can win regular season games with a guy like Alex Smith. Yeah, I don't know. I just don't know if the ceiling is very excited for Washington this year.
Well, Alex, there's so much excitement for Alex Smith at times. He does not have the supporting cast that he had in Kansas City. I mean, his backfield's not as good. Yes. He doesn't have Kelce. He doesn't have Tyreek Hill. So I am a little unclear of why there's this kind of optimism here. I don't think this Redskins team's in very good shape top to bottom.
Well, I think people are looking at Alex Smith last year and seeing, he had one of his best years as a deep thrower. He was, just the pure volume of deep throws he attempted. I would insist that's a function of Tyreek Hill running 20 yards behind the defensive backfield, and that kind of makes anyone ineffective deep thrower, but we'll see what happens there. Paul Richardson can run, obviously, not like Tyreek Hill. Maybe Josh Doctson has a breakout season, and maybe Jordan Reed stays healthy, and then you have something cooking on offense.
What concerns me is those two guys, though, Richardson and Doctson, they're at their best when they go up and get the ball. They're great ball trackers. They're high point receivers. And to go get the ball, you've got to have someone that's willing to throw the ball with an undefined window, because that's why the receiver has to elevate and separate in that fashion. Alex Smith's not an undefined window type of thrower. So unless he's willing to throw up a 50-50 ball to those guys, I don't think it's going to amount to a whole lot.
Yeah, well, we're about to find out. It will be interesting, and I obviously, you get a quarterback with a new coach. You always wonder, will something be unlocked that was not unlocked in the past? Alex Smith has been around for a while. He's worked under a lot of different coaches. Maybe Jay Gruden is just happens to be the right guy with Alex Smith. We'll be optimistic. I'll be optimistic, Andy, even if you're not going to be.
All right, well, all right, that's fine with me. I hope I'm wrong, by the way. I like to see guys do well. And Washington's a big market team, and I'm on D.C. radio a lot. I get a lot of attention when they do well, or if they do very poorly. It's one of the two. Just don't go 8-8, and I'll be happy with however it goes with them.
Before we move on, football is about to make its long-anticipated return to living rooms all across America. That means bragging rights and huge cash prizes are up for grabs at DraftKings.com, the leader in one-week fantasy sports. With one-week fantasy at DraftKings, you choose when to play. Draft a new team every week with no season-long commitment. At DraftKings, you are the GM. Just choose your players, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. No matter what your skill level is, there's a contest waiting for you at DraftKings. So if you've been thinking about trying one-week fantasy football, now is the time to play, because nothing makes Football Sunday more exciting than when you have a DraftKings lineup on the line. To celebrate week one, DraftKings is hosting a free, that's right, free team pick'em promo. Download the app or go to DraftKings.com now and use the promo code 10things, that's 10things, All you have to do is pick at least half of the winning teams correctly, and you'll win a share of $1 million. That's not hard at all. That's promo code 10things, 10things, only at DraftKings. The game inside the game. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/pick'em for details. All right, couple more summer injuries to discuss here, Andy. Let's start with Marquise Lee down in Jacksonville. They seem to be Lee was their leading receiver last year. Led them in receptions, also led them in targets. They seem to be kind of stacked with unproven yet interesting, fast, athletic guys in this receiving core. I don't know how much of an impact this really has. It's an impact. You'd rather have Marquise Lee than not have Marquise Lee, but I don't know if this is necessarily devastating.
No, it is for him, and I think he is a quality receiver when you use him the right way. One thing that they did a lot in Jacksonville is put him in a minus split, so tight to the formation, and run him on a shallow crossing route from there. And that, he's very good when you give him that kind of clean access off the snap, but you can do that with other guys. And I think D.D. Westbrook, who's a more expansive player than Lee, but similar to him, he's more similar than not similar. I think he can do a lot of what Lee does. Keelan Cole wound up being very productive for him last year in the right context. I think they'll be fine. They're such a highly schemed offense, passing game wise in Jacksonville anyway. It's too bad for Marquise Lee, but the Jags have a lot of depth at wide receiver.
They do. And again, you're not going to look at any of those guys and say, you know, Keelan Cole is a superstar or anything like that. DJ Shark, the second round pick from LSU, he's a big time height speed guy, and Lord knows we've seen some of these LSU guys, you know, put up big numbers there, come into the league and really outperform what people thought they'd be.
DJ Chark, does he go Chark or Shark?
Shark.
Okay.
Did I give it? I
thought I heard you say Shark,
right,
and
there.
I thought like, oh, I hope Chark. He doesn't pronounce it that way because I like how Chark is, and I thought I've been saying Chark.
Yeah.
Okay. Just clarifying. I wonder how often he's called Chark. Clark. Do you think he gets called Clark 10% of the time?
That I like bet that's a common typo.
Oh, I'm sure it's a common typo, and I would imagine if he has to call in somewhere, like he's making airline, I don't know when calls in their airline reservations anymore, but let's say he did, and he had to give his name on there. I bet they think Clark every time. He has to spell it. He's probably got, I do that. I just say Benoit, and then I start to spell it right away, Benoit. I bet he's learned to do that as well.
Yeah. I always spell Gary at Panera.
Yeah,
and they told me to stop doing it.
But you got
like, yeah, we know how to spell.
Aren't
that.
You Gary with an IE at the end though? Don't you? Or have I had that wrong all along?
There's a silent M in there too. Oh, you know, before we're going to talk Alshon Jeffery here in a second. I did want to remind everyone though, NFL Deep Dive Show starts on Thursday. That is Andy and I. If you listened to the show a couple years ago, we did this every week, every Thursday. We'd come out previewing the big games for the upcoming week. We also have the mini mailbag in those shows, so keep those questions coming. But yeah, obviously the opener this year is going to be Eagles and Falcons. Alshon Jeffery, we don't know if he's going to play. He might be starting the season on PUP here. Factor in Carson Wentz's, at the moment, probably a 50-50 proposition. Are the Eagles going to be looking at something of a Super Bowl hangover here early on?
We'd just be guessing it. Wouldn't we be guessing at that, the Super Bowl hangover thing?
Let's do it this way then. Take out the psychology of it. If you had week one, it's the Eagles versus the Falcons. It is Nick Foles under center. It is no Alshon Jeffery. Who's the better team at that point, Andy?
Well, I happen to think the Falcons are the better team. They're my Super Bowl pick, so I think I've got them as the better team overall. But who wins that game, or who do I bet on if Philadelphia is at home, even though I guess we're taking out the psychology of things? That's a hard one. I think Atlanta's pretty complete. To me, Jeffrey, I don't think there's this is going to sound nuts to people. This isn't something I'd put in a tweet because a bunch of jackasses would run within the wrong direction. But I don't think there's a whole lot of difference. Back to the idea we talked about with Frederick and do you have to change your offense when he's in or out or whoever that kind of guy is. I don't think there's a lot of difference between Mac Hollins and Alshon Jeffrey in terms of how you would approach your offense. Jeffrey's a better version of Mac Hollins, but I think Mac Hollins could plug in there and they would carry on just fine for a short term.
All right, that's fair enough. I'll say that. The other receiver I want to talk about, Josh Gordon, has been reinstated with the Browns. We certainly hope Josh Gordon can, you know, sort of keep his life on the right path here and have a long, fruitful career. Let's just talk short term, though. You now have Josh Gordon, you have Jarvis Landry, and you have probably the young guy, Antonio Callaway, as the top three receiver there, not to mention you got David Njoku, you got a lot of good running backs. We've talked in the past, if you're going to win games with Tyrod Taylor, but if you're going to score points with Tyrod Taylor, you really want to surround him with kind of elite talent. And you kind of had that in Buffalo with a healthy Sammy Watkins. And obviously it turned out guys like Robert Woods and Marquise Goodwin were maybe a little bit better than we thought. When you have this much talent, not to mention a good offensive line surrounding Tyrod Taylor, does that make you feel a little bit better about this Browns team maybe putting up, let's say, 24, 28, 31 points a game early on in the year?
Not really, because I don't think Taylor's that kind of QB. Like Robert Woods, for example, got better after he left Taylor. So did Goodwin, because they went to highly schemed offenses. Woods joined the Rams, which they're very precise with how they use their wide receivers. Goodwin joined the 49ers, and Shanahan's very precise in how he uses his wideouts. With Taylor, because Taylor's not an anticipation passer. He's a see-it-then-throw-it guy, which is fine. You can still play that way, but when you have guys like that, you become a little less schemed, because if he's not going to anticipate the throw, then scheming it almost becomes pointless. And those the higher schemed you are, the more timing and rhythm based you are as a passing game generally. And Taylor's not that kind of thrower. So what winds up happening is, we always say, offenses take the shape of their quarterback at the end of the day. Well, you find throws that are comfortable to Taylor, that fit his style, that give him some options to run if things break down. And that turns back into spread formations and ISO routes. And the Browns, we saw how that went for him last year. Now they're better at wide receiver. Yeah, your guy Callaway there, the fourth-round rookie, and Gordon, if he's back, that'll help. So maybe they can win. If they wind up playing with those ISO routes, maybe they can win that way. By the way, Gary, because Landry's, again, if we go back to Landry, he's the X factor. And I think he is, I don't think you should use him on ISO routes. You can, he'll be effective enough, but he is valuable because of the dimension he brings to a schemed passing game. And that's why I think it's going to be Baker Mayfield's show eventually, because I think he can run a schemed passing game. But have you been surprised at the amount of attention that Landry's gotten? Like, he's almost become the unofficial spokesman of the Browns. And the other day I saw a headline, and SI is guilty of this too. We had a big 24 hours thing with him, but it was something, the headline was amounted to Landry's looking to fill the LeBron void in Cleveland or something like that. When did Jarvis Landry become a first-class superstar in people's minds? Because I think if you ask around the NFL, they'd say he's probably in the 15th to number 20 wide receiver if we were to rank him.
Yeah. I don't know, and I don't know if it's just the excitement of I mean, look, people play fantasy football. People know who Jarvis Landry is. He had a lot of catches, that sort of thing. So those guys always get bumped up a little bit anyway. I mean, if you're going to talk about filling the LeBron void, you're probably talking Myles Garrett or Baker Mayfield. I mean, those are the super talents there. Jarvis Landry is a good player, and I know he's a guy everyone already knew. And he's a guy who, I don't know, I guess he said some things to make headlines, including in our 24 hours piece with Ben Baskin. So
Ben Baskin is good at getting these Browns receivers to say things for us.
He had the Josh Gordon piece last year.
We got to let him go hang out with Antonio Callaway. That would be some real sensational stuff.
I don't know if anyone's letting him hang out with Antonio Callaway. That's another guy. I hope Antonio Callaway straightens it out. We didn't do a piece on him in the lead up to the draft. We just sort of ran out of time and resources. But we had done some preliminary stuff on him, talking to some folks in the, you know, going back to college recruitment and stuff like that, and some folks at Florida, and the signs were not good. Hopefully he matures. He is very talented. The last thing I do want to say about Tyrod Taylor is, and look, we've both been on the show. I think I've actually been more vocal than you on this point, though you might argue with me on this. I think it's absurd that Baker Mayfield is not under center week one if they are indeed doing that, and it looks like they're doing that. I do understand they turned the ball over 41 times last year. Tyrod Taylor in... let's say three seasons with the Bills had 47 turnovers. So, if nothing else, the Browns will not turn the ball over 40-something times this year, and I guess that's a start.
Yeah, I mean, and there's some value to that, but I think that turnover thing gets a little bit overblown.
I say that. No, that's my line.
Oh well, all right. You're a smart guy then. You're a smart guy.
You stole my thing, Andy. That's all I'm going to be talking about all season, is the fact that we've become so overcautious with offensive football. It's just absurd. With all the rules going against defensive players.
Statistically overblown, I've learned this week. I had some good because I floated the question on Twitter, and I think you would have thought, based on the reaction of people, that I had said Aaron Donald should be a backup and should play no more than 15 snaps a game and maybe get some practice squad reps. That's how people took it. When I said, hey, is it weird that Aaron Donald got Defensive Player of the Year when he's a defensive tackle on a run defense that ranked 30th in yards allowed per carry? So there were only two other run defenses that got beat more on a snap-to-snap basis than the Rams. And in my opinion, D-tackle, you're the initial run defender in most setups there. So I just was surprised he got Defensive Player of the Year so handily. And of course, that, you know, now I hate Aaron Donald, I'm an idiot and all that stuff. But what some of the people that actually made that a conversation said when they put it back, Evan Silva was one of them at RotoWorld, is apparently there's almost no correlation between yards allowed per carry and wins and actual overall performance of your defense. According to what these guys were saying, that yards per carry thing gets also, I guess in this case, it was overblown by me. On the Donald part, it gets overblown. Some stats lie,
yeah, no,
I guess.
I could see that. I also think linebacking play had a lot to do with their yards per carry stuff last year. But
of course,
that is
of course
a good point. That and look, it, with the rushing stats, it's kind of like, you know, a lot of teams that that have quote unquote good rushing offenses, it's because they lead in a lot of games anyway, and therefore you're running the ball in the fourth quarter with a 2-touchdown lead and therefore racking up stats that way. It's a rich tapestry. How's that for wrapping it up?
That's fine. The NFL, the teams are all so equal in talent, are so close to one another. Even the Browns compared to the Eagles, who I know just played the other night, but we're talking regular starters. That it's big plays are what decides. That's why people say the whole turnover battle, because turnovers are big plays, explosive plays, 15-plus yard runs, 20-plus yard catches. When you add up turnovers, explosive plays, let's put sacks into that equation because they tend to be explosive in the different direction. Those are what decide games, ultimately, almost always. Rarely is it this team did a better job of marching up and down the field against that team, which is probably another reason that rushing stats don't always correlate with performance the way we would think.
Yeah, no, I think there should be and you know, Robert Mays had written about this a couple years ago for us during his stint with the MMQB. You know, it teams like the Cardinals, when they had that big year, and the Steelers and the Panthers during the 15-1 year, it was all about big plays. It was all about risk taking downfield. And so many teams have just moved away from that because they're so terrified of turnovers. And obviously no one's pro turnovers. No one's happy when they turn the ball over, but, you got to test the defense. And, you know, that's what we saw Nick Foles do last January and February. And that's why the Eagles were Super Bowl champions with a guy who really nobody wanted even as a backup last year.
If Nick Foles keeps playing, though, and it's preseason, so I don't pay super close attention, because I think these games are important in the preseason, but to me they're an extension of practice. So you never make a final declaration on a guy, certainly on the preseason. But obviously Nick Foles has struggled this preseason. Wouldn't it be fascinating if he continues to do that into the regular season, and that's kind of what he becomes in the end? I would wonder what we would look back on that last year's playoff run. I wonder what lens we would see Nick Foles in, given that 7 or 8 years from now.
Yeah, I think it would be really interesting. I don't have anything else to add to that. I think it's a very real possibility. Again, we don't want to overreact to what happened this summer, but, you know.
Who,
I don't know.
Who are some guys that have been decent players, and that's probably been kind to Foles over his career, and then have had big-time playoff runs in any sport? And
any sport?
Yeah, like if Nick Foles did what he did in the postseason last year, if he did that 10 times a year, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer if he did that for a few years.
Yeah.
I mean, he played as high a level as you can play in the biggest moments, and yet he might go down as a very average QB, which is what he's been every other snap of his career. Who are the other guys? That Flacco did that a little bit in the playoff run, but who are some of the other guys? Is that something people who listen to our show and do all these big research things for free for us, would they be willing to send that into us on that? Because I would be interested. The all-time one-hit wonder or flash-in-the-pan kind of team.
No, I mean, you go back to Jeff Hostetler won a Super Bowl and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Not single-handedly, but... and that's also... That's the last thing. I have to read this... this ad from one of our partners here, but the last thing I want to say is there's this conversation, especially when it comes around guys like Alex Smith and Tyrod Taylor, that you can win. You know, people say you can win a Super Bowl with this guy. You can win a Super Bowl with a lot of guys. There's like 40 guys you can win a Super Bowl with, especially if you have we've seen Trent Dilfer win a Super Bowl and Jeff Hostetler win a Super Bowl and Nick
right.
Foles win a Super Bowl and Peyton Manning won a Super Bowl when he could barely throw the ball anymore. If you have the right team, you can win a Super Bowl with just about anyone, but that's maybe we should aim a little bit higher. Can you win a Super Bowl because of this guy, or
right,
is it a guy that you're going to win a Super Bowl because he didn't lose it for you?
Yeah, you can win a Super Bowl with this guy and 4 or 5 Hall of Fame caliber defensive players. That's really how the saying should go. You can win a Super Bowl with that guy and Ray Lewis or Von Miller or something. I mean, that whole you can win a Super Bowl with him or not. That can be put into any context that the user wants to put it in.
All right, before I move on, Andy, we got a couple more things to touch on this week. But you know what? Hiring used to be hard. Multiple job sites, stacks of resumes, a confusing review process. But today, hiring can be easy, and you only have to go to one place to get it done. ZipRecruiter.com/things. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates, so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. With results like that, it is no wonder that ZipRecruiter is the highest rated hiring site in America. And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/things. That's ZipRecruiter.com/THINGS. ZipRecruiter.com/things. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. All right, before we sort of lightning round to some stuff, just one more reminder. If you subscribe to this show, you now get the MMQB Podcasts suite. That is myself and Andy doing the Monday Morning Podcast. Andy and I back again every Thursday, starting this Thursday with the Deep Dive Podcast, where we're going to look ahead. We're also going to have mailbags, so send those questions in, talkback@themmqb.com, our Twitter, our Facebook, all that stuff. But if you subscribe, you're also going to get the MMQB Podcast with Albert Breer, which now features Jenny Rentis and Connor Orr every Wednesday. You will also get the MMQB Gambling Podcast on Friday. I'm in that one. So is Jimmy Traina of the SI Media Podcast, and so is my brother, who is the managing editor of Daily Racing Form Sports. We're going to talk spreads and totals and all that stuff if you're into it. But lots of good stuff. Lots of good shows. I thought last week was a great week.
I know the answer to this, but for the people scoring at home, this is a different brother than the one that had the Travis Frederick nerve disorder.
That is correct. I have now referenced two of my three brothers on this podcast as we slowly sort of take over the MMQB podcast feed. But yeah, this is Scott does the podcast with me, the MMQB Gambling Podcast. He is a bright guy who has a this was his trivia question the other day on the debut episode on Friday when we were doing team win totals. But I want to ask this to you, Andy. Last 20 games against AFC West opponents, what is the Kansas City Chiefs record?
You sent it to me in the outline, so I think I remember it. In fact, I can
put
it like eight. Yeah, I think I saw it. Maybe it was Reed Foster that sent it.
MMQB tweeted it out.
Oh, I was reading Twitter. I was reading the MMQB's Twitter feed, apparently. Is it 18-2?
18-2. That's something, right?
That's something. Yeah, that matters.
Yeah.
And they're so highly schemed and well coached. You wonder if that's part of it. Andy Reid's always been good coming off of bye weeks too, as everybody knows.
Yes,
he is a methodical thought process type of guy, which is part of the reason some have said that their offense, when they need to go 2 minute, that doesn't always go fast enough. Remember the Super Bowl loss that Philly had to the Patriots in the early 2000s, and then the Chiefs at the end of the playoff game a few years ago. When they went, so as also against the Patriots, when they went too slow in comeback mode, that might be part of it. But Andy Reid, the other side of that is a guy that's maybe not a fast twitch play caller, is extremely good when he has time to make the play calls. And the Chiefs are always very good early in games, scripted plays. They're good coming off the bye when there's a few more days to prepare. And maybe they're good when they are facing division opponents who they've seen several times and have more extensive film on.
Yeah. Now, 18-2, one of those two losses was, you remember the Thursday night game last October against the Raiders, where it was the Marshawn Lynch ejection game, and it ended on, some like seven consecutive pass interference or holding calls in the end zone that allowed the Raiders
great.
To get
the score. It was like an NBA ending. Kind of indie. A lot of stoppage of the clock and fouls and waiting on that, but the tension was incredible. It's also like a baseball game where it's next pitch, now we're going to wait, but the tension builds. That was a fun ending to that game. I remember watching that one.
Let's talk about the quarterback market right now. That's always interesting. So Ben Volen of the Boston Globe had reported the Seahawks offered a second rounder to Indianapolis for Jacoby Brissett. Chris Ballard, the Colts GM, said it didn't happen, but what are you going to say at this point? That is obviously fascinating because Russell Wilson plays for the Seahawks, and I certainly don't think it's a potential quarterback controversy there. But I guess it's sort of the increasing market for affordable backup quarterbacks.
Well, I thought the league got buried in this one. In fact, we maybe should have let off the show with this. That Ben Volen headline came out. And people go, whoa, Seattle for Brissett's interesting. And then we turn to the Colts and the Colts deny it, and we all think about Brissett and the Colts won't trade him, and that kind of becomes the headline. When, in fact, I think if we had paused and looked closer at our initial thought, it's, wait, Seattle offered to trade for Brissett? Why would you – how is that not a quarterback controversy? If they're offering a second-round pick for a guy – who's young, and Russell Wilson is entering the second to last year on his contract. Russell Wilson's going to be 30 years old in 2019, and they have not been the same team the last year or two when the offense has run through him as they were when it ran through Marshawn Lynch. And I know the previous coaching, the Daryl Bevel staff, and there's some of those guys who are still there, but at times they got frustrated with the stuff they could draw in their passing game because they're so unconventional there. You take all that into consideration and then add the fact that Wilson's going to cost more than any QB when he becomes a free agent. His price tag is huge. I think we could interpret the Ben Volen news as Seattle toying with the idea of moving on from Russell Wilson. I'm not saying they would, but I think that is more in consideration than people would guess.
We will we'll pump the brakes a little bit because obviously it is just a report at this point. We don't have any independent confirmation from our staff on it. Perhaps Albert Breer will in his Monday column, but it's interesting. It certainly would be a fascinating option. Brissett to me is one of the most interesting guys out there because if you are looking for a long-term quarterback. You can obviously you can get him. He doesn't make very much right now. He was very promising last season. And on top of that, let's say when Brissett hits free agency, he's not really at a point, especially if he's a backup for the next two seasons here. He's not at a point where he's going to demand a mega contract. I mean, you could probably get him in for something in the you know, a shortish term flexibility to be long term type of a, you know, maybe $15 million a year type of deal, which is an incredible bargain if you think you are going to have a starting quarterback here, almost like a second rookie contract.
Yeah, I mean, I am high on Brissett. You know how I feel about him, and I would be pleased if you told me I had to start my franchise with him. I'm not saying he's Carson Wentz, but I could live with him being my franchise QB or my potential franchise QB. Back to that Seattle side, Gary, remember when John Schneider, their GM in Seattle, went to Josh Allen's pro day? And people said, well, what's he doing there? And apparently there was a report that Russell Wilson's camp reached out and said, hey, anything we need to know about this? And John Schneider played that, and there's two ways to look at that. John Schneider's explanation was he wanted to see, he hadn't seen Allen play before, and he wanted to see him play live. He was supposed to at a different game, but Josh Allen was hurt, so now he was taking the opportunity. And I get that, and there's some truth, and even if you don't need a QB, you study other QBs because maybe John Schneider becomes a GM for another team one day. Maybe someone wants to offer a trade 2 years from now, and you need to know who all the players are. So I understand scouting someone. Laramie, Wyoming, though, is not a place you're just passing through. It's not like John Schneider was going to someone, he's on his way to a pro day, and he's going to USC, and hey, UCLA had their pro day the day before, why don't I get there early and go to that? That's not how Wyoming is. You go into Wyoming with a reason and a purpose. I went to that pro day, trust me.
Yes.
You fly into Denver, and then you drive 2 hours up into the sky, and you come to Laramie, Wyoming eventually. So I thought it was revealing that John Schneider was there. I'm not saying it means he wants to get rid of Russell Wilson, but that's two indications now that they're thinking about other QBs, and Josh Allen's not someone they were drafting to back up Russell Wilson.
I mean, look, it's also a possibility that they want people to think that they're thinking of other QBs.
Sure, you're right. And that's a great counter-argument is if they really did want to maybe replace Wilson but weren't sure they could, they probably would scout Josh Allen privately so that they don't create the very rumors that you and I are discussing. And if they wanted to create the illusion that they want to keep either, maybe they would. I think the counter to that counter is that Josh Allen's camp could say to Seattle, because Josh Allen was very busy before the draft, like any QB prospect was, and they could say to him, we don't have time to. We don't have time. We got to meet with other teams that need QBs now and are drafting in the top 15. So, but yeah, you're right. And if Seattle didn't want it to be known that they're maybe sniffing around other QBs, John Schneider probably wouldn't have been at the pro day. I don't know. Gary Grambling phrase.
We are talking about this late in the show. Basically because we haven't, at the MMQB, we have yet to confirm the report. And not that Ben Volen isn't someone who is, you know, he's an excellent reporter. He's one of the best out there. But we don't have any real direction. We don't know who the source is, and that stuff matters. And we just don't have a feel for the report right now. But
that's a good point, too. This whole thing could have been for nothing. But I think it's an interesting conversation to have.
I mean, is it coming from the Seahawks? Is it coming from the agent? Is it coming from the Colts? We don't know.
Yeah. What is Russell Wilson worth? We're going to have that conversation a lot in a few years. We're having it about Aaron Rodgers now, but Rodgers, it's not as much. It's just more of a conversation of when will he be paid what he's worth. No one's really arguing that he should or shouldn't be. Everyone thinks he's going to be number one paid QB. Russell Wilson, I think a lot of people will think that, but I don't think every football person will think that. And was Russell Wilson's greatest value to the Seahawks in and of himself those first few years in his career? Or was it that he had a cheap contract opposite a star-studded roster?
Oh, I'm sure if nothing else, John Schneider's looking back at those years and saying, wasn't it nice when we had a quarterback who was making $600,000 a year? Before we moved on from the quarterbacks here, I did want to talk Teddy Bridgewater briefly. There's all this buzz, Teddy Bridgewater, Jets want to trade him. It seems like there's just no market for him. And we've talked on the show about Teddy Bridgewater and some of the shortcomings he has. He has some positive qualities as well, but the lack of arm strength is limiting to what you can do with him. But gosh, I don't know. What's the value of a guy like that who a lot of teams would probably look at and say, like, boy, we'd love to have him as a bridge guy or as a backup or something like that. I don't know what you pay for that.
I don't either. I'd want him as a backup. I'd pay him to be a backup, and I wouldn't consider many other options with him. So fifth-round pick, fourth-round pick maybe if you feel that you're a contender and you just want a super insurance policy of backup. To me, that's the Teddy Bridgewater discussion. The odds, and I know he's played well this preseason, the odds of him being better than he was in Minnesota right now are very slim, and I didn't think he was particularly potent in Minnesota.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the fact that we've had really no injuries to quarterbacks this preseason.
Which
I'm not
is
forgetting
nice. It's
anyone,
been,
right? Yeah.
It's been a relatively, and no disrespect to the Marquise Lees out there or Geis for Washington, but it's been a relatively healthy preseason, I feel like. I don't think there's been a lot of awful. I watch that so carefully this time of year because my preview for the magazine comes out and we have to update this stuff last second if a guy gets hurt. So I just root for no injuries even more than I usually would. And I feel like it's been a successful summer for that.
Yeah, no, it's been good here. I do wonder if sometime to Kirk Cousins, I wonder if Mike Zimmer would reach out to the Jets and try and get Teddy back there. Would be interesting to me, but I don't know. I don't know if there's really a home for Teddy Bridgewater as a even as a bridge guy as the league stands right now. And the one other thing I wanted to add was. If you're the Jets, so here's my take on Sam Darnold, because I think back to the bowl game they played, that USC played against Ohio State last year, and Ohio State really, with all the time they had to prepare and with all the talent they have, they did some wild stuff that you usually don't see a college football defense do, and I think Darnold was a little bit frozen in the headlights for the most part. I think that's going to be an issue when he gets out there at first. I think he hasn't really seen that kind of stuff in the preseason. When he starts seeing the more exotic stuff, the more expansive stuff from defenses, I think it becomes a problem for Darnold. Do you rush him out there early for the Jets and say, well, the only way he's going to adjust to this stuff is he's got to see it. And once he starts seeing it, then he starts getting better. Or do you kind of say, you know, let's see if we can, you know, get out to maybe a 3-1 start or something like that. Let's play the veteran and go from there.
It's a great question. What you have to remember is that these guys are seeing some of this stuff in practice. Todd Bowles does a lot of stuff defensively, and so I'm sure the Jets' offense in training, they don't see it in practice during the season because then you're just going against scout team because you're preparing for the game. But during training camp, when you're implementing everything and getting into football shape, you do play your offense versus the defense, and you try out who you play against. So I think Darnold's probably seen more of this stuff than we would guess, but I agree with everything you're saying. I think he will have some deer-in-the-headlight stuff. It'd be creepy if he didn't. He's like 20 years old right now. It's not possible for him to be fully prepared for everything he's about to see. And so then the conversation is, what do we do about that if we're the Jets? And that's the responsibility of Jeremy Bates, our offensive coordinator. Do we move the pocket for Darnold? How do we simplify the game? I think the more you put a QB like that on the move, the more comfortable they have a chance to be. So that's what they need to do if they're willing to play that way. The wild card to me still, Gary, is that the Jets, I'm sure, are sitting around saying, we've got a really good defense, a better one than people realize, and they're probably not saying this, but maybe it's driving their thoughts somewhere. It's not a great AFC this year. We're one of the better teams in the AFC. If we want to believe that, give us a quarterback who we know at least what he's going to do. Give us the guy that doesn't get us fired, which is what McCown is, that's what McCown is. That's why he's 39 and still in the NFL.
I think it would be Bridgewater, though.
Do you think it'd be Bridgewater? I think it'd be McCown.
Yeah.
I think they'd start McCown and everyone would go, wait, what? Why? He hasn't even been playing. You think Bridgewater would start week one?
Yes. Over McCown,
I don't know
yeah.
About.
The way I'd handicap it, I'd go Bridgewater 50%, Darnold 30%, McCown 20%.
Really? I think it's, to me, it's 40 Darnold, 40 McCown, 20 Bridgewater.
Wait, did you just give 340s? Say yours again.
No. I said 40 McCown, 40 Darnold, 20 Bridgewater.
Oh, 20 Bridgewater. Okay, I gotcha.
McCown signed for a 10... McCown signed for $10 million. That's dead yeah. cap money. You're not giving a third-string quarterback $10 million. They signed Bridgewater for a fraction of that.
You might be right.
Only reason he's not playing is because he doesn't need to right now. They know what they have yeah. in him, and he knows what he's doing. He's 39. He's been around. He's just wasted practice reps at this point. I would not be at all surprised. I'd be surprised if, in fact, I'm going to go 41% McCown, 39 Darnold, 20 Bridgewater. I bet we get to week one and McCown starts and the New York media is up in arms saying, what? What in the world? Why? And it's going to catch a lot of people off guard.
All right. Off the record, I tend to agree with you, but on the record, I will stick with my take, because that's what you do in this industry now. Let's lightning round three more topics here. Jimmy Smith, 4-game suspension. That's trouble for the Ravens a little bit here.
It is. They got some, we'll keep it on the field and then leave the off the field stuff for a separate conversation with Jimmy Smith. They've got some depth to rely on, though. Tavon Young can play the slot, and so that allows Marlon Humphrey and Brandon Carr to play outside. I think they'll be okay. Certainly you'd rather have Smith than not have Smith.
We literally did not have one conversation about Marlon Humphrey last year. What do you think of him as a rookie?
I liked him overall. I thought he got better over the course of the season. He had his welcome to the NFL game against Detroit. They absolutely dominated him. That was a game the Lions played. I believe the Ravens won it, but the Lions visited Baltimore. Other than that, though, I thought Marlon Humphrey showed what you want to see from a first-round cornerback, and I'm not surprised that he's edging out Brandon Carr for that left corner starting job.
George Aloka lands with the Vikings. That's sort of Rich getting richer here. I like Andrew Sandejo. I think Andrew Sandejo is one of the most improved players in the league over the last 2 years. You kind of love Andrew Sandejo, though.
I absolutely love Andrew Sandejo. I think he and Harrison Smith are the best safety tandem in the NFL when you put it within the context of their scheme. They run their scheme, the Minnesota scheme. Those safeties run theirs better than anyone else runs their scheme. My sense is there's something up with Sandejo. Is there a chronic injury somewhere here? Why would Iloka sign there unless he was given assurance for that contract? Especially, it's not an AI. Yeah. And Iloka understands, I'm sure his agent understands, that it's a down market for safety, so he was going to get a small contract anyway. But Iloka basically took a prove it deal and then elected to play in a scheme that he's been in there before, which is a very mm-hmm. safe way to do that. He would not, and all the teams that need safeties, like the Raiders, I'm sure, were interested. He would not have joined the Vikings unless he had very strong reason to believe that he's going to be starting next to Harrison Smith. And Iloka is not better than Sandejo. That's why.
Yes.
That's why you wonder about what's going on there.
I agree with that. That one's a bit of a head scratcher. I guess we'll find out over the next couple of weeks. One more. It's been a constant topic of conversation. The new helmet lowering rule. We had fewer flags thrown in preseason week three. Andy, we haven't really talked about this on the show. Lord knows everyone's been talking about it everywhere else, and I'm sure we will talk about it once the games count and there are calls that are sort of making headlines here. My take on it is this is a thing that had to happen at some point, and it was never going to be something that could be put in easily or smoothly in any way, and it certainly doesn't help that there's a ton of changeover with the officials this year. Do you have any take? Do you have anything you want to discuss with this one?
Yeah, here are my bullet, because I've been asked about this a ton on almost every radio spot I've done this summer. This comes up. Here are my bullet points on it. Is remember the steroid trials and all the senators that did the grandstanding and wagging their finger at the Major League Baseball players, and they got on ESPN, they get on all the news shows because it was so sensational. The NFL cannot afford to have that happen with this player safety thing, and it hasn't happened yet, but it at some point it can, and then you lose control. So you've got to have a policy in place that at least fends off the outside forces that are trying to that are going to eventually want to regulate your game. So you make a policy that's probably if taken literally, it's a little over the top. It's not possible to actually enact a policy of no one can use their head at any moment. So then they start calling it, they overcall it, and initially, like they always do in the preseason, They find that they're boxed into a corner because it's a player safety issue. It's not an integrity of the game or competitive balance thing. So you can't really tweak the policy because it's for safety. Remember when they moved the umpire back into the backfield rather than near the linebackers, And they'd said it's for his safety? And they started playing the games, and people said, this isn't good. It's not as good when he's back there, and they couldn't move him back to the middle of the field because they'd already said it was for his safety. It's the same kind of thing here. So then what you have to do is really police the rule differently than you say you're going to. And people might think that's wrong, but that's the reality of what you have to do. It's rules in place as a technicality. They do want to make the game safer. They need to, and they're going to finesse the rule and make it work in that way, and we're going to have to accept that, and I think that's the only outcome.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm sure there will be times this year where we, shake our fists at the television over some shaky calls on this rule. I think it's the same way. I mean, look, it's we have rules where if you touch the quarterback in the head, even if you're just trying to knock down a pass and don't really make particularly forceful contact, that's not really a player safety issue, but it falls under that large umbrella. So you get penalties there, you get penalties for hitting the quarterback low. I remember being a kid watching the Steelers. Basically, the Chiefs locked a game over the Steelers because Tony Gonzalez is coming off the line of scrimmage, sort of stumbled. I believe Greg Lloyd was still out there at that point. Greg Lloyd sort of, in more of a natural football position, happened to not grasp his face mask, but sort of brush his face mask, and that was it. That was a fourth quarter play. It was a third down play. It was a third and long, automatic first down, and that's how games are decided sometimes, and it's just... I don't think it's enough to drive people away or really ruin the game in any way, shape, or form, but I think it's something we're just going to have to get used to and accept that it's part of the game now.
And these guys can adjust better than we're led to believe. I know it's bang-bang timing and that kind of thing. These are world-class athletes. Everything they do is bang-bang timing. It's a quick-twitch game. Everything they do. So this is just one of the other things they're going to do. And this is how they're supposed to have been tackling all along anyway. It's, as Bill Belichick said, it's a fundamentally sounder tackle to remove your head from that equation. And that's how they teach it. That's how other teams, some of the teams, not all of them, have taught it. I think this will be a whole lot of nothing by the end of this season, and probably much sooner than that.
Yeah. No, I agree. I'm sure it's not the last time we'll talk about it, but I don't think we'll be talking about it nearly as much as people think we will this year. Andy, that's going to be a wrap for this show. We will be back Thursday morning, though, with the season debut of the Deep Dive Podcast. Send your mailbag questions. Subscribe to the feed. You will get the MMPB Podcast with Albert Breer, Jenny Rentis, and Connor Orr joining Albert for that show. And, of course, you'll get the MMPB Gambling Podcast. As far as this show goes, thanks to our sponsors, DraftKings, NFL Game Pass, and ZipRecruiter. Without them, they wouldn't let us do this show, so please support them the way they support us. Thank you to our researcher, Reed Foster, for all the hard work making us sound smart. And, of course, thanks, as always, to producer Shelby Royston, all the guys at Cadence 13 who make us sound good every week. Most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. You really are the best. Like we said, we'll have the weekly mini mailbag. Keep sending those questions in. If you have any feedback about the new show, the new shows in the feed, please let us know. gremling_si, Andy_Benoit, talkback@themmqb.com. To remember to listen and subscribe to the MMQB NFL Podcast, all those shows we were just talking about. You can get us wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys Thursday morning.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.